Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans.
Good morning, folks. Not Steve Williamson here, but Mike Cosentino. Good morning. It's Democratic Perspective yet once again. It's 8:15. It's Monday. It must be Democratic Perspective. We, Steve is in New York City doing New York stuff. All those New York values and whatnot. God knows. God knows what he's doing. But we have, on the show this morning, we have Michael Weiser.
Hey!
Candidate for CD4, the congressional district that much of the Verde Valley lives in.
Much of the Verde Valley. It's the western half of the state of Arizona. It runs from Yuma to Utah, Parker to Payson, and all the places around Phoenix where the people aren't.
Very. That's right. We have a congressional district where the people are not.
And there's 700,000 people in the congressional district, and the largest city is 50,000. There's almost 100,000 who don't live in any city at all, just on some hillside somewhere in the vast Arizona deserts.
Wow. Good district.
Oh, I love it. It's it's really done a lot for me. As a former social studies teacher, I spent a lot of time looking at the land, and I feel so connected to the size of it that because I have to travel all the time.
Sure. Well done.
You love it because it's caused you to burn out to literally two vehicles in campaigning across the district because the district's so large.
And don't forget the 7 rent-a-cars in addition to the 2 vehicles last cycle.
You burned those out too?
Yes.
He's running against Paul Gosar.
Paul Gosar.
And he's done this before. So.
Right. This is my third cycle. And my first cycle, I was a full-time teacher and was in the Democratic primary. I lost by 19 votes. 19, and it was so compelling that the following year we had me leave teaching, and I've been doing this full time. I've been traveling, battling for the American way for about 5 years now.
And supporting lots of other Democratic candidates across the state?
Oh, yes. Well, I was figuring that since I don't have any money and I don't have great prestige, I really needed to have a movement that was of the people and lots of folks working on it and me working on lots of people's issues instead of just being about my blah, blah, blah. And so we finally got to where it's building that way.
Well, judging, I saw you in a crowd last night and judging from that reaction, they're ready.
Yeah.
You know, they may not have been ready last election cycle for Michael Weiser, but they are ready now. Whatever you're running against Paul Gosar.
I am. I'm running against
Republican, CD4, lives in Prescott.
The poster child for a dysfunctional Congress.
Poster child for a dysfunctional Congress. Very true.
He puts the O in obstructionism.
We put the O in obstructionism or the OB in obstructionism. We have a 45-minute show, but we can sum up, at least on this microphone, we're going to sum up. Gosar is a party hack. He supports the party way more than he supports the people in his district. And just ideologically driven, like so many of the Republicans, and not for the individuals that he represents.
And not a resident of the district. He in 2010 was elected to represent CD1, right?
Right,
right.
And
the Flagstaff area.
And, he replaced Ann Kirkpatrick in that district.
Temporarily.
When Ann had focused on trying to get things done for the American people, and so apparently Gosar didn't like that, so he ran and got elected and started the obstruction. And then when Ann ran again in 2012, he decided to change districts without actually moving. I don't know how you do that, but
you buy a poster, you buy an address in the district that you're running in, and it's
thank you. Yes.
It's really low. It is the lowest thing that there's lots of
now
low
there
things
is happen. A house American in Prescott Park. Just because nobody's in there, that doesn't mean.
Well, we've seen this act before with Rick Renzi, who, you know, was indicted on, you know, as a representative of this district that had an address in Flagstaff. And none of his neighbors, that, you know, everybody knows he never spent a minute there. I mean, he had five kids back in Virginia, never moved him out here, never moved anybody out here. And that's the Rick Renzi syndrome. So we've seen all of this before, and it works well. Arizona voters, at least in CD4.
For the previous decade, anyway. Yeah. I think that America is sweeping Arizona along with our progressive change. Our country is changing so much faster than the Republicans can even keep track of. So I'm not sure that it's that the future is set in stone the way the past has been.
Excellent. Yeah, I was started to say, I think, based on what I saw you in a crowd last night, these people wanted to hug him and kiss him and sign anything he wanted.
Of course, they were women, but yeah.
Anything that, not
no,
that, not
it's
that
true.
It, not that it matters.
It's true. We had a lot of people who were, I would get introduced to folks and they would hear that I was running against Paul, or they would hear that I was just trying to do something good for the public. And it was definitely a love fest last night. Thank you for bringing me there, Mike.
Well, the idea is that people care a little bit, and people are angry at the nothing happening in Congress. Even if they are aware of what's happening, what they find is lies and distortions and people working on things that they don't care about.
The average Paul Gosar, and we're having way too much fun bashing Paul. We're going to move on to other stuff. But the average Paul Gosar speech sounds like this. Benghazi, 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 Fast and Furious, Benghazi, emails, Benghazi, can I get a tax donation?
And his current issue is trying to impeach the director of the EPA.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That's about the Flint water thing, right?
Among other things. She's a member of the government, and he doesn't like that, even though he's a member, too.
Well, he spent all of his effort, and like several different Republicans over the last decade, last 20 years, trying to weaken or destroy the EPA, and now he wants to impeach her because the EPA wasn't able to do what he thought it should have been able to.
And I got an email. I'm on his email list, and I got an email last week that is an attack on the National Monument proposal for the Grand Canyon watershed. And in the entire email, I don't think there's a single truth. But he's very slick at putting it in the mouths of his constituents. He claims that it would do away with water rights on the land. It doesn't.
We're listening to Gary LeMaster. Tell us about lying Paul Gosar.
He says it would stop hunting and fishing and hiking and biking and camping and horseback riding on the National Monument lands.
Apple pie? Is it going to hurt apple pie?
The only thing it's going to change is it's going to stop uranium mining by foreign-based companies on the land and letting the radioactive waste, you know, leak into the Grand Canyon and in the Colorado River.
There's a city in eastern Arizona right now, Sanders, Arizona, northeastern Arizona, that just made the news again because of the amount of uranium and radiation in their municipal drinking water, and it came from a uranium mine spill.
Well, for some of us, his attitude toward the Grand Canyon is almost unbelievable. In other words, this state treasure that we get to guard, we have guardianship over this national treasure. And to have uranium mining and the commercial interests that go in there, and all the things associated with that that he supports, and it makes you stuttering mad.
Right,
you
say, well, stuttering mad.
This is the Grand Canyon, man. You don't screw around with this. Everybody's in favor of preserving the Grand Canyon, aren't they?
No, apparently not. But Paul made national news with this Grand Canyon bashing last week. In fact, Huffington Post, among others, did an article about how Gosar conducted a Grand Canyon bashing party. That's the meeting in Kingman that you were talking about earlier today, Gary. But it's not uncommon. Gosar wants to establish the idea that the citizen, the Republican rabid right-wing citizen, doesn't have to have respect for anything that gets in the way of his desires. This is a second time here in short order that Paul Gosar has made national news by attacking something that should be an institution, like an unquestionable institution.
His view is that...
I was referring to the Pope.
His view is that any national monument lands, any BLM lands, are a federal land grab.
Right.
And so, you know, in reality, what they are public lands, and by creating a national monument, we'll keep it public land.
Right.
But what he wants to do is turn it over to foreign-based mining companies, and
right.
under the you know, the cloud or the misbelief that it's going to create some jobs.
Gary has a whole list of lies, and we want to get to that.
Right. He has a whole book of Republican lies here.
That's right.
I have a couple of them, actually.
We did a show.
Yeah, that's true.
We did a show on Gary's fine book. What's the title of your book, Gary, since we're taking a commercial break here?
Yeah.
Antidote to Factory Politics.
Antidote to
Did you dedicate it to Paul?
I should, but there are so many Republicans that it would fit, including his good buddy Bob Thorpe, who is our legislator in our district.
Well, the whole thing about the uranium mining is part of an ideology that the right have come up with of trying to privatize public holdings. Here in the West, there's a powerful group called the American Lands Council that seems to have gotten into the drinking water of all our Republican leadership, as they're wanting to basically privatize lands and say that the state would benefit from the sale of those lands. The Prop 123 that Ducey is trying to push on the public is coming from the same mentality.
American Land Council.
Land Council. Look into that. They started in Wyoming, and they're very powerful in places like Mojave County, where I'm from. 97% of the land is owned by some government or another. So counties in the West, states in the West, have a hard time making the revenue that they would have off of taxes if that land had been privately owned. So
we're listening to Michael Weiser, candidate for Congressional District 4. He is running against Paul Gosar in this election cycle of, as we know, a crazy presidential cycle. But certainly the down-ticket races are interesting also. Michael Weiser.
Down ticket. There's races all the way down to city council. I think that somebody is running for dog catcher.
Well, we'll talk about that another day.
Not that far.
We want to find out why. Before the show, we did talk about not making it a Gosar bashing show for 45 minutes.
Yay.
But it was so easy, such an easy target.
We could make it much longer. We could do several shows.
Let's leave off of the Gosar bashing and let's find out why they should vote for Michael Weiser.
Well,
for now.
Yes, I'm totally excited about that. I did want to say, all those out there in radio land who have been listening to this Gosar radio bashing that we just did, this was for you guys. This was for you. See, I know that there are people around the area who get so inflamed by Paul, and I'm really interested in talking about my ideas, trying to improve America, but we got to spend some time honoring the people
Absolutely.
Who have these objections.
Without a doubt. That's good.
I had been a pretty happy social studies teacher with a very exciting poetry career, and that sounds oxymoronic, you can have an exciting poetry career. And
it's exciting just now.
Right. I got excited just repeating it.
Financially rewarding, but go ahead.
No, we didn't talk about financial.
No, we didn't talk.
But I had been pretty politically active, I thought. But now America's in a crisis. And I kept telling my students they had to grow up to be leaders and fight against these problems that we're facing. And they kept saying, you need to do it. Yeah, they weren't just pushing it off on me so they didn't have a responsibility, but they were encouraging me to live up to the ideals I was expecting them to live by. And so eventually I was in the Occupy movement in 2012, and in Kingman, turned out that the Occupy movement was a lot of Democrats that were just pissed off at the overall political system, and they asked me to run for Congress. Yeah. It was exactly the moment I had been telling my students to be prepared for. You know,
there you go.
Somebody's going to come to you someday and say, we need your leadership. You better figure out what to do. I hadn't really thought of myself as a political leader. I enjoyed being a poet and being a funny teacher and doing my little stuff. But it's too big of a crisis to ignore right now.
John F. Kennedy drew the connection between poets and politicians. And he, in 1962, said there was more of a connection than any, and he went on to detail it, which we'll once again do on another show since
another
I can't
show, yeah.
call that quote up.
Well,
but Michael Weiser is not hiding like many Democratic candidates in Arizona do. He's not hiding his liberal side. He is, his liberal side is out there. He's, in fact, he's counting on his liberal side, aren't
right.
you?
I am. I have been from formerly the Dennis Kucinich wing of the Democratic Party. Now I guess they call it the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party, but
yeah.
we've in Arizona, there's so much control by the Republican establishment. The Democrats get to feeling afraid of expressing their opinions. I travel around the state and have people reminding me that they don't want to put a bumper sticker on their car because they're afraid that they're going to be keyed. They've said that they've had signs stolen, et cetera, and et cetera. And you know, it's a basic bullying thing that we've dealt with from kindergarten. And you have a couple of things you can do with a bully. You can either cower and submit and let them ruin your life, or you can stand up and fight back. Whether you win or not, at least the fighting back gives you a sense of self, a sense of pride. And that's what, you know, my life has changed so much for the better, despite the hardships of being a candidate. Because of the purity of what this does, you know, if you spend every day trying to listen to what people want to hear and improve the country, it knocks a lot of guile out. A lot of things become unimportant.
I think, you know, one of our problems in the country, but in this district and in Arizona in general, is labels. And I think if you look at Michael's stances on various issues, he represents, if you took away the labels and just asked people about the issues,
good point,
they would agree almost down the line with Michael
right.
and disagree almost down the line with his competition or his opponent. But as soon as people put labels on them, they ignore all of the issues
right.
and just vote for the label. And so I encourage everyone to look at what Michael actually stands for and is running on.
Well said, Gary. They can't see it right now, but my head is nodding off. I'm in such agreement.
Not that he's falling asleep.
I'm in such agreement with that, and that is true. The other thing I want to say is Gosar in print, as many Republicans, Brenda Barton, Robert, they talk about supporting education. They talk about all the things that they don't do.
I don't know if we can actually. It's early in the morning. You shouldn't have people thinking of Paul Gosar and education in the same sentence, because he has been, I'm a school teacher, or a former school teacher, because of the Republican attack on education. That's what provoked my wife and I both to go into politics. Paul has declared that he wants to get rid of the Federal Department of Education, that the national government has no business getting involved in education, and that kids should get the best education that their parents can afford.
We talk about these things, and I mean, we don't believe the regs are going to happen, and we kind of shake our heads and say, "Oh, this guy's crazy." And then I don't know, and then vote for him, I guess, because that's how they get voted. But these things really are happening, and these positions really are damaging to the nation and to the congressional district. You can't the Department of Education, and certainly all bureaucracies, are not perfect, you know, organizations. But you're not going to be a player on the world stage unless you have some national standards in education. You're just not. You need these entities in order to lead us out of the darkness. If you don't like them, then get involved with them and change them. I say the same thing about the state school board. I say the same thing about your charter school board. And I will say the same thing about your public school board. They're all public organizations, and you don't like them, change them or run for them, just like Michael is doing with Congress here. He has a real shot this time. One of the things Michael doesn't hide, one of the things he does grab for his the candidate want to say something?
No, I was just listening to what you were saying. I had thought about the whole idea behind the Republican attack on education.
Yeah.
And I guess, having talked to Republicans at length, I guess that their leadership is not intending to destroy our country, though that's the result of their approach. But what they're doing is they use basic emotional tactics, seeking what's going to propel people to act without thinking through. And they, the whole idea of cutting education, which is so ridiculous, comes from tapping on some basic things. Greed and figuring that the government is ripping you off by wasting money. And then the willingness of people to sacrifice their neighbor for their own personal interest. The whole tax cut idea is a big blanket that education is being beaten with as part of that. But people say we need to cut the budget because you want to have more of the money in your pocket. Yeah, I got an extra 50 cents this week. I may not have a decent school for my son to go to, but I got to keep 50 cents.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. We haven't had a show since that we haven't talked about Prop 123 coming up May 17th. The stuff is going to start coming in your mailboxes now for Proposition 123. This is a statewide proposition. It has nothing. Michael Weiser, our guest this morning, is running for a federal office, but I'm going to ask him, what do you think about Proposition 123 as an alternative way to fund education in Arizona?
I think Prop 123 is a disaster, and it's essentially our despicable governor putting Arizonans in a position of cutting off your arm or cutting off your leg.
Having said that, should they vote for it or not?
I'm still up in the air. I'm very ambivalent.
Me too.
Coming out of classrooms where we were always battling for budget and trying to meet mandates that were added without any kind of funding mechanism to work with it, my knee-jerk reaction is to say, well, we better take this because it's all we're going to get. But I talked to a lot of people.
You hear that from teachers.
Right. I hear that from teachers. I'm a teacher, so that was my initial reaction was we better just take this because it's all we're going to get. But as I look at the long-term disaster ahead, there's a huge financial cliff that the state's going to fall off of in 2022 when the current funding system changes and we switch over to the new funding system. It's going to be another devastation for education. And then people will complain why the society isn't working, so we need more prisons.
The irony is that Michael and I were at a meeting last week where we heard people on both sides of the issue talk about Prop 123. They used the exact same information and argument to make their case. Both sides. It's a very difficult issue. And
real quickly, give an example.
Well, they both recognize that the schools are in trouble. They need some immediate influx of money. They go into great detail on what the situation is.
And 123 does that.
And 123 does immediately put in some money. But my two cents worth is what the goal is, as I can see from the Republican side, is the public education funds is the largest or second largest budget item in the state. And it's a pool of public money.
Yeah.
And if you look at what the Republican goals have been across the country is to tap into those pools of public money and privatize them, turn them over to corporations so somebody can make a profit over it and take that money, the effect of that money, away from our children.
Well, you can look at the leadership of the Republican Party here at the Arizona State Legislature. People like Eddie Farnsworth and Stephen Yarbrough both making bank off of private schools, charter schools, and then saying that they're doing that for the public good.
And they're the ones that created the legislation that made that possible, too.
Some background about that.
That's the definition of corruption, by the way. But go ahead.
Yeah, some background about that Prop 123. The Prop 123 is a result of a lawsuit that the citizens of Arizona had against their government, where the government wasn't paying money that, that we were supposed to have. And so instead of actually like admitting their duplicity and paying up the $300 million in back money that they owed teachers and schools around the state, they came up with this cockamamie plan. The only thing that pauses me from saying no is a no decision means that we have to have the political will to stand up and fight back and get what we want.
Right.
And I've been pushing people politically since the 1990s. I'm not sure that America has risen to the level of citizen activism to effectively get a different result. If we vote no, then we've got to push our state government to give us something that we want instead.
To fund it as the Constitution requires.
As the Constitution requires.
Incidentally, the last six state treasurers, five of the last six, all Republicans, are opposed to Prop 123.
Right.
The only treasurer, former treasurer, that's in favor of it is Governor Ducey.
Right. Well, I don't know. We'll end this. I just wanted to talk about
since we're talking about education, and I am a former school teacher. I have a master's in ed, and it's one of my top three issues, just so I can clarify what some of my proposals are, because it's not all about bashing the Republicans. I'd like to see caps and schools with no more than 25 students in a high school class, no more than 20 students in an elementary class. I like to see the federal government, and this is something that the federal government can fix. This is money that the federal government could be putting into education instead of expecting the states to do it, because our states are being led by ideologues who prefer to have ignorant public because they work cheaper.
Well, if we're going to do this like the McLaughlin Group, I will have the last word. And yes, you got to vote yes, and then hold your nose and elect Democrats so you can change it later on, because you need the money now. My teacher friends will be happy to hear this. They are, and acquaintances, they are so angry that there's a movement against 123 because they are so desperate to have to do their jobs. You know,
just
we're talking about teaching. We're talking about walking in a classroom, your children, the future of the country, and yet they're begging. We're talking 3, 4, 5 years that the state of Arizona has not supported education at a level that the courts said they should. They are owed, the schools are owed billions of dollars. How do you tell that? How do you tell that to an eighth grader? We owe you $1 billion. So yes, you're using this textbook. You don't even have a textbook, as in many, many schools.
Let's talk about some issues other than education, because we know a former teacher is going to be in favor of education.
Right. I'm very much in favor of education.
Well, nobody's not in favor of education, by the way.
I call Michael a libertarian Democrat, because a lot of his stance on issues kind of overlaps with people that are libertarian.
Yeah, when we take off the labels about Republican versus Democrat, I find I'll get pretty far down in discussion with people before we come to things we disagree with. Education, yes, is of course, like, as a former teacher, as a Democrat, it's one of my central issues. This year, we are expanding one topic that had been a piece of my platform to be the basis of the center point of our campaign, and that's criminal justice reform in various ways. We're looking at some mandatory minimum sentencing reforms. Obviously, I'm most known in Arizona for my stance on cannabis and marijuana reform. I'm the state director of NORML, which is a national organization for the reform of marijuana laws. I came out in 2012 as a congressional candidate calling for national legalization and ending the drug war.
Just to be clear, you're in favor of not putting people in prison for smoking marijuana.
I'm very much in favor of not putting people in prison for smoking marijuana. Marijuana has a 10,000-year-old history with human beings. It had been one of the primary ingredients in medications when it was made illegal, and its illegality is a result of crony capitalism at its worst. Here in the United States, it's resulted in the arrests of 20 million people since 1965, every person who gets arrested in Arizona starts out with a felony charge on their record. Whether they get it, you know, adjudicated down to misdemeanor or not, it still stays as a felony arrest.
Which means they can't, they have to appeal to be able to vote or to do many other things that the rest of the state.
Meanwhile, we see it hasn't had an impact on reducing the drug war hasn't had an impact on reducing the consumption of marijuana. It has instead militarized our border and given the people who are already using racism as their guide for how to do border relations. Now they have something else to point.
I won't go into detail, but I encourage anyone who supports the drug war to look up the John Ehrlichman, the former aide to President Nixon. Look up his recent statements on the reason for the drug war.
I can go into some detail. Ehrlichman acknowledged that Nixon couldn't get mad at people for being hippies or being anti-war or being black, but he was mad at all three of those groups. So they created,
because they didn't support him.
And so they created the drug war as a way to target people in those groups. Did they know what they were doing? Ehrlichman admits it. Absolutely. It was totally intentional. And now we have people such as Paul Gosar, who is on the other side of the marijuana issue, is talking about how it's a threat to our American tradition. But, you know, you go all the way back, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Monroe, and James Madison were all not only big hemp growers, but cannabis consumers.
We want to talk about what's going to be on the ballot. You get a normal and the state organization that's been working to get this, and you have enough signatures. Tell us about that.
Yes. In 2010, they passed a Medical Marijuana Act here in the state of Arizona, and we saw that this was a platform to develop for absolute legalization. I mean, I have a back injury that debilitates me. I don't think that people should have to be sick to get access to cannabis. So we're trying to pass a citizens initiative in 2016. I've been working on the citizens initiative process since 2013. We had to have 153,000 signatures this election cycle. There's two efforts. One of them has over 200,000 signatures already, so we will be voting on that one.
Okay. So, in other words, on the ballot, when they're trying to decide between Bernie or Trump, they're also going to be deciding whether to legalize marijuana in Arizona.
And Arizona is one of about nine states around the nation that are going to have some sort of a ballot measure, whether it be medical or full adult use.
And it's it's legal in two states now.
No, it's legal in four states. And the District of Columbia. So, you know, the Washington, D.C., where these laws are being made, should be on board with their own city.
Well, I think it should be required to be consumed in D.C., just as a... have to live there.
So we know you're in favor of education and strengthening education and reforming our laws, our criminal laws, and you're for legalization of cannabis. What else are you for? What about healthcare or Wall Street?
Healthcare. Now, Wall Street, in previous campaigns, I had the reinstallation of Glass-Steagall as one of my central issues, and I still think that this is important for our listening audience out there. Glass-Steagall was a New Deal-era piece of legislation that separated investment banks from commercial banks. In other words, the banks that invest in Wall Street and make billions or lose billions were kept away from commercial banks such as your personal bank where your mortgage would be.
Banks of deposit, yeah.
In 1999, this Glass-Steagall separation was removed, and so the two business interests commingled, and that's what led to the housing crisis and the financial collapse in 2008. So reinstating Glass-Steagall is still one of my central issues. There's another thing that comes from the progressive community. Bernie Sanders talks about it in his speeches, but I've been talking about it since 2010, and that's the idea of an electronic transaction tax. It's sometimes nicknamed the Robin Hood tax, and it's basically a tax per transaction of Wall Street. And while it may be a decimal point, like 0.00123, Wall Street does billions of trades per day. And so it would add up to being, it would like be a governor slowing down the pace of the market so we don't end up with crazy booms and crashes.
If I could add to that, it would help stabilize the markets, because what's happening now is that you have companies that are doing micro trades,
right,
through, you know, having their computers closer, a few millimeters closer to Wall Street,
right,
than their competitors. And so they constantly make these little micro trades, you know, thousands of them, you know, per minute.
Per minute, right.
And so what this would do is put a tax on that kind, especially that kind of trading. So it would benefit us all by stabilizing the markets and give all investors an even, you know, chance.
We've talked about that on this show before, and certainly the host here is in favor of it. The financial transaction tax, we've been calling it, the Robin Hood tax.
So those are things that
raise $135 billion the first year.
There you go. See, those are things that come up from my thoughts about Wall Street. When it comes to taxes, I'd like to see a return to a progressive tax rate that's working for all Americans, not just trying to improve the pocketbooks of the rich. I don't think we need to go all the way back to the World War II, 90% of your income being taxed, but I believe that Bernie's proposal goes up to 52% of income for the top tax bracket being taxed. To my mind, if you're getting more from your government, you should pay more for it. And the rich, our government is designed to advance their causes, so they could pay for that infrastructure that they're getting, and not just in campaign donations.
One of the reasons that during the post-war there was such a boom in our economy and growth in jobs and salaries was because of high corporate taxes. Mm-hmm. Bill Gates just came out with a statement that the people of the U.S. benefit greatly, much more greatly, when there are high corporate taxes than when there are low corporate taxes. But we're moving the wrong way.
Thanks to Bill. And, you know, it's about time that America took the lessons from these new Panama Papers and see what's actually going on with our efforts to empower the wealthy and remove restrictions on them. It turns out that political leaders and business leaders around the world have been avoiding paying their taxes. And, you know, maybe Mike has $5 and he avoids paying taxes on his $5. That's a small thing. But if somebody like Bill Gates is not paying his taxes on $17 billion, that's going to add up.
Well, or the $20 trillion that the Panama Papers deals with. We probably should do a show on it just because it's a little complicated. And you're not hearing as much about it in the corporate media because the companies that, you know, may be indicated in the Panama Papers are the companies that also bring you the news. So that's in some cases. So
in U.S. companies don't need the Panama or offshore tax havens all that much because they have them in Delaware and Nevada and South Dakota.
Right. Well, that's right. We didn't need Panama.
Right.
But the money's still not going back into the economy. It's still not going back in the jobs. And
two other tax.
You're going to change all that when you go to Washington.
That's my intention, yes.
All right.
Two other tax-related things that I'd like to see changed. And these aren't my ideas. These are ideas that are popular and being brought forward by the progressive community. One is that capital gains should be taxed at the same rate as income. And the other is that there should not be a cap on people paying into Social Security. Now, this is a different arena, because Social Security and taxes are they're different areas. But right now, if you make above a certain rate, you don't have to pay into Social Security. So that means that those people are not contributing to the well-being of everybody. The Republican mentality, I'm getting back to this again, is to deal with your base instincts, your self, your greed. And that's not the way that you can run a country. You can't run a country just thinking of yourself. We need to accept that we're all stuck in this together. And if North Dakota falls apart, all the states around it suffer.
Both of those issues are aimed at ending or at least reducing the income inequality, and they both are to take away the oligarchy.
Right. Well, since the 90s, we've seen an acceleration of money accumulating with the 1%, and after the economic collapse in 2008, 90% of all new money that's come into the United States has gone to that 1%. 90%, and then the rest of us get the other 10%.
I've got to ask you about one of Gosar's most hated items, is the very hated Obamacare. What's your stance on health care insurance?
Well, I think that the European nations have the right approach, that health should be a public citizen right. I try to move away from the phrase single payer or universal health care, and I'm moving towards a term like public health, the same way we have public education. I think that our country suffers health care wise, and what are we, like 27th in the world when it comes to health care outcomes, or 18th, some number that belies our. We always talk about how
people
America's
don't
number
believe
one.
It, yeah, they don't believe
we're
it.
We're not.
But you're right. We are way down. 16th, 27th, depending on who you're talking to, and
yeah.
Healthcare. People don't believe it. They believe their doctor, their hospital, their medical is just fine. It's those other ones. It's the ones in L.A. or it's the ones in Oklahoma City that are bad.
We hear from one side, from the Republicans that it's the fault of a bureaucracy that healthcare costs so much, but studies show that basically American healthcare facilities are charging what they can get. They're, if they can get you for an arm and a leg, they'll give you a crutch.
And the pharmaceutical industry is even worse. But and one of the favorite panaceas for amongst the right is the idea of tort reform. And there's actual proof that in the states that have, Arizona basically has already completed tort reform.
Right.
But in the states that have put forward tort reform, it hasn't really changed anything. It hasn't reduced the number of lawsuits. Well, it has reduced the number of lawsuits. It hasn't reduced the cost of health care.
Well, yeah, our purpose in having regulation is to improve the quality of society. The Republicans, again, will talk to you about how can we get rid of as many rules as possible. And Paul is always talking about how he wants to take apart the federal government. It makes me wonder why he wants to work in it if he has so little respect for it.
These people hide in behind the 10th Amendment, but the 10th Amendment only specifies that the things that aren't covered in the Constitution are the province of the states. But the Constitution, the rest of the Constitution, gives you the federal government great authority and power to do whatever it
wants. Talking to Michael Weiser, candidate for CD4, if you get a chance, folks, get online and take a look at the congressional area for Congressional District 4. It's an amazing part of Arizona.
Before we run out of time,
yes,
and
sir.
I see that clock there, there's two
there
other general areas of my campaign that we're working on. One is immigration reform, and the other is rural infrastructure. In Arizona and probably in the rest of America, the rural community is a minority, and the rural community is an oppressed minority. We have higher rates of incarceration, drug abuse, poverty, mental illness, earlier death rates.
What does immigration reform mean to you in 10 seconds?
We should have people coming in the United States instead of building a wall.
All right. Very, very good. All right, folks, you've been listening to Michael Weiser. He is a candidate. He will be on your ballot for Congressional District 4. That takes a lot of the chasm listening area. We want to thank Democrats of the Red Rocks for their generous support.
They have a breakfast coming up this Thursday with
yummy
candidates for the
Arizona Corporation
Mandel
Commission.
Mandel and Chabon
will be here. That's right, the two gentlemen, and they will be on the show shortly after that. A lot of people from other states say, what in the hell is the Arizona Corporation Commission? But you'll get to find out. I think it's become a better knowledge of what it is. People, Democratic Perspective is all our shows, our podcasts are on vvid.org. Please listen to our podcasts.
You've been been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.